Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to DearHoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to DearHoffman.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our discussion about vitamin E. And when we talk about vitamin E, we have to talk about the vitamin E family because there are really eight different forms of vitamin E, which include the tocopherols and the tocotrienols. And we're learning a lot about it through today's guest. She's Jolie Root. She's a nurse and a nutritionist and a health educator for Jared Carlson Company, the makers, actually real innovators in the field of vitamin E and tocotrienol delivery systems. So we were talking earlier about vitamin E in relationship to liver disease and talked about it in brain disease, cardiovascular disease. But Jolie, I'm sure you're aware that there is a lot of controversy and blowback about vitamin E. Vitamin E was really thought to be a panacea when it came to cardiovascular prevention and cancer prevention. And yet there have been a couple of studies which suggest that, no, it's really not that great. And even some studies that suggest that taking vitamin E could make things worse. Why do you think that is? And does that, and I think possibly you've seen this because you work with J.R. Carlson. There's been a little bit of a consumer blowback when it comes to vitamin E consumption, just because of the bad press that it's received in some of these studies.
Yes. Well, there was an Annals of Internal Medicine meta-analysis that really dealt one of the heaviest blows to vitamin E, but I would push back against that. The allegation was that high doses of vitamin E might increase the risk for mortality. But part of the fault that was found with that meta-analysis by members of the industry who worried that people would quit taking vitamin E, and they were right to worry, was what looked like a bias in the selection of the studies that were reviewed.
And that often happens with a meta-analysis because, you know, as we both know and many of our listeners know, a meta-analysis is not a new study. You just basically look at all the studies out there, and you get to pick and choose which studies you want to include. And, you know, either consciously or unconsciously, there could be some bias in selecting studies that may refute the benefits.
Right. So in this case, there were about 2,170 studies at the time available on vitamin E, and the researchers selected 19 of those. And 18 of the 19 studies that they selected actually didn't support the researchers' conclusions, but that vitamin E increased the risk for mortality. But the study that did was a hormone replacement therapy study that examined the effects of vitamin E and estrogen in combination, which would confuse the results.
And it's probably a synthetic kind of estrogen, not even the bioidentical natural estrogen.
Exactly. So that was an issue. And then there was a study, HOPE, and it was HOPE 2. It was the second version of the study, and forgive me for not knowing what HOPE stands for. But
probably the E has something to do with vitamin E, right?
E, yes, okay. Exactly. But the patients were at least 55 years old. They had vascular disease or diabetes and at least one other significant cardiovascular risk factor. The subjects were typically taking five different medications in addition to vitamin E: beta blockers, antiplatelet agents, statins, diuretics, calcium channel blockers, and ACE inhibitors. Yet the increase in heart failure, this is what was seen in HOPE 2, was an increase in heart failure. The placebo group had 12.1% rate. The vitamin E group had 13.5%. So it wasn't a huge increase, but that was the difference. And that increase was attributed exclusively to vitamin E with no adjustment for the pharmacotherapy that they were on. And we know that some of the problems with some of the cardiovascular medications is a side effect of depletion of coenzyme Q10, which increases the likelihood of heart failure. Mm-hmm. That is true of statins. It's true of beta blockers. I think it's also true for the calcium channel blockers.
Yep, probably is.
There are so many different groups of medication that one of the adverse impacts of the medication is a depletion in the body's ability to manufacture coenzyme Q10, which supports the mitochondria to produce ATP, and the heart is a very, ATP is energy for the cells, and the heart is a very energy-hungry organ. And so if the mitochondria are diminished or injured by a medication, a weakness of that organ is to be expected, and heart failure is a mitochondrial defect largely. So it may have been very unfair to pin a slight increase in heart failure on vitamin E when all of those other medications were in place.
I think another issue that came up in relation to some of the studies, there was also, I think, a study on prostate cancer, vitamin E, you know, not beneficial,
right.
Was the use of exclusively alpha tocopherol.
Because oh, I agree.
That's the standard. And then, you know, when I researched this, I did an article on prostate cancer. Well, you know, the studies don't really support vitamin E for prostate cancer. But then when you look at studies which exclusively look at the gamma tocopherol, those studies really strongly support the gamma tocopherol form of vitamin E for prevention of recurrence
right.
of prostate cancer after you've had an initial bout of it. Or even, you know, if you have ongoing prostate cancer, it slows the progression, reduces the death risk.
Exactly. I think, you know, the SELECT trial is an example of that, where they were doing selenium and vitamin E, but as you mentioned, it was
alpha tocopherol. Wrong selenium,
wrong vitamin E.
Right, right.
So, you know, if we had been using gamma tocopherol, and because the selenium was beneficial, so if we had been using selenium with gamma tocopherol, I bet the entire trial would have been beneficial. So sometimes flawed design is the reason for what seems like a surprising lack of a null or even a negative impact.
So another knock on vitamin E, you know, I want to clear the air on some of these issues because I think it's out there and you're an mm-hmm. expert, is, you know, if you're undertaking surgery, they always say, you know, don't take vitamin E because, you know, you got to be very careful. Vitamin E is such a profound blood thinner that you're going to have a serious risk of hemorrhage with vitamin E. What's the literature say to that?
Well, up to 800 units is considered safe to be taken concurrently with heparin or Coumadin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so most people are not taking more than 800 units of alpha tocopherol.
That's what I take on a daily basis, 800.
The same issue is implied but isn't actually a reality with omega-3 fish oils
right.
as well. There was a really compelling look at the concurrent use of omega-3 with either heparin, Plavix, Coumadin, aspirin, and these patients, and the numbers of patients was in excess of 100,000 patients, were going through either bypass surgery, which is remarkably invasive, or angioplasty, and there was a small group of childbirth, which it's interesting to me that they would be on blood thinners, but maybe they had a history of clotting, but blood thinners taken at the same time with fish oil, and there was not any indication of adverse bleeding,
mm-hmm. I remember
additional
that study.
Yeah. adverse bleeding with the fish oil. So, that was presented at the American Heart Association, published in the journal Circulation, and it's almost as though no one was in the room except for Dr. Harris, who presented, and me, because the doctors will still say, oh, fish oils, you have to stop them
yeah.
for at least a week before surgery, and the evidence is not actually there for that.
I think that's also
true for the vitamin E, unless a person is taking a very, very large dose of vitamin E.
Right. And on the vitamin E, you know, there is this situation in stroke, which sometimes involves, you know, blood thinning, and
yeah.
in heart surgery, called reperfusion injury, where for a while the blood does not flow to a certain area. It could be in your brain, could be in your heart. That causes the tissue to die or be damaged. But then as the circulation returns, blood rushes in there, oxygen rushes in there, the vulnerable tissue gets hit with all this pro-oxidant oxygen. And the vitamin E appears to actually protect the tissue from further damage. This term is reperfusion injury, and it's actually the bane of the heart surgeons and the neurosurgeons, because it can really create a lot of havoc.
Yes. So we look at vitamin E as protective against reperfusion injury. Coenzyme Q10 is another thing that is very protective. If you're having bypass surgery, you should take CoQ10 right up to and right after the surgery. DHA omega-3 in the brain metabolizes into a docosinoid compound. It's a, you know, an activated form, if you will, of DHA called neuroprotectin D1 that helps to protect against reperfusion injury in the case of a traumatic brain injury or stroke. So there are a number of different nutritional approaches for dealing with the limiting the negative impact of reperfusion injury.
So let's look at some of the brain studies, because this has been controversial too. Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, there have been some studies that show remarkable benefits of fairly high dose vitamin E, and yet other studies have not seen that in those conditions. So maybe you know a little bit about those studies.
Well, I think I don't know a lot about a lot of specific studies when it comes to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's with vitamin E, except to say that in population studies where patients were taking vitamin E or a combination of vitamins E and C over a long period of time, they were less likely to experience either Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. The data is mixed on a benefit of treating those conditions with vitamin E and even with omega-3.
Perhaps what we're seeing is that once you have a condition and, you know, you're pretty damaged, maybe it's beyond the power of the vitamin E to reverse it or even slow its progression, but maybe as a means of preventing these diseases before they become fully manifest, that vitamin E could confer benefits. I think that's what those studies are suggesting.
I think so, too. Now, I will say that there have been a slowing of Parkinsonian symptoms with high-potency coenzyme Q10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of changed the player from vitamin E to CoQ10. And I want to say, Dr. Hoffman, that it was something like 2,000 milligrams. It was a very, or was it 1,200 milligrams?
Very high
Maybe
dose.
Maybe one was, but it was up there. It was a pretty big dose for CoQ10. But the sooner we get engaged in the conversation of healthy aging on our own behalf, the better our outcome will be. That said, if my mother were diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I'd be throwing everything in but the kitchen sink at her in order to try to gain as much time as I have. But the studies have not been particularly compelling when a person is solidly into that level of decline.
And again, they often use the alpha tocopherol, so we always we have to kind of qualify that.
Now, you know, we can say coconut oil is interesting for people who have lost function with Alzheimer's, because we've now discovered that the Alzheimer's brain has insulin resistance, that it doesn't fuel itself as efficiently with glucose, but it does with ketones, and when people take coconut oil, it quickly converts to ketones, which are an alternative fuel, and some people in sort of mild states or even medium states of Alzheimer's have benefited from several tablespoons a day of coconut oil, and by benefit I mean gaining some function and stabilizing for a longer period of time. I'm not saying a cure, but stabilizing for a while.
No question.
But for those of us that are not experiencing decline, boosting our antioxidant with vitamin E, our essential fats with omega-3s, the many different things that we have as tools only make sense. And neurologists will tell you that the things that we do that protect our blood vessels and our heart earlier in life help to protect the aging of our brain when we get into more advanced decades of life. So the sooner we start, the better.
Let's talk a little bit about eye health. There are some studies, I think, on vitamin E and eye health.
Yes.
That are pretty significant. What do they show?
ARIDS, the age-related eye disease study, vitamin E, vitamin C, beta-carotene, lutein. But what we see in the eye is, when you look into the eye, you see the blood vessels, you see the macula, you really see the evidence of unhealthy lifestyle maybe sooner in an eye than you do in the bigger blood vessels in the body. And the reduction of inflammation, the protection from oxidative stress. One of the big problems with our eyes is sunlight into the eye. That exposure to ultraviolet radiation really damages the eye, damages the lenses of the eye, damages the macula, the very central part of the retina that gives us focus. And the antioxidants protect us from that ultraviolet exposure. And by protecting the health of the blood vessels through the things that we discussed early on, you know, with inflammation, with protecting against free radicals, with protecting against the damage from sugar, those blood vessels are really protected, the lens is protected, so more clarity. And what the ARIDS study was looking at was cataracts. And cataracts are a clear lens that becomes cloudy because of sugar, because of oxidative stress, smoking. There are a lot of lifestyle factors, and vitamin E is protective in those cases.
Indeed. And also, to some extent, macular degeneration. So we're
yes.
Nailing the two major causes of vision loss. Pretty good evidence on vitamin E for supporting immunity, particularly in the elderly. I think there's some studies that show that, when you get vaccines as an older person, they often don't work. But if you were given vitamin E, among other things, I mean, we got to probably talk about the whole family of immune supportive nutrients, but vitamin E seems to be a key player that helps to bolster the natural. You know, when you have a natural process of immune decline as you age, it seems to help to reverse it.
Well, vitamin E, vitamin C works a little with it, and selenium increase our resistance to infection. Vitamin E enhances T cell function. It enhances the release of interleukin-2 and gamma interferon, which are protective immune factors. It improves B-cell activity. It improves the production of antibodies. All of these things are factors in resistance to infection and a robust immune system. And so the shame to me is that vitamin E intake is so low in our culture, that such a large number of people don't really pay attention to vitamin E. That's what happens when bad press impacts people's choices as far mm-hmm. as supplements are concerned.
Yeah, it's definitely something where if you're not on a really careful diet, you can really be at risk of insufficient vitamin E. It's a little bit like, magnesium is another one, where a junk food diet is almost bereft of vitamin E, and probably a very significant double-digit percentage of Americans are frankly vitamin E deficient.
I would bet that it's up in the 90%
mm-hmm.
Of people who don't get even the RDA or the,
yeah.
Which is paltry.
Which is paltry.
Minimum wage, and it's not even. It's worse than minimum wage, and no one can live on that. So,
what is it, 60? Is it 60 or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. When we talk about diabetes for a moment, people that are diabetic have very high rates of inflammation, and vitamin E is an anti-inflammatory, and it specifically works against C-reactive protein, which is something that's very injurious to blood vessels, that's released when LDL gets oxidized, and that happens at a higher rate in people that are diabetic. And New Zealand research and research at University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center found that 400 to 800 units, but more appropriately, 800 units of vitamin E would drop C-reactive protein levels by half in a very short amount of time, in a matter of weeks. And so when people are only taking 60 units or 30 units, as in some multivitamins, they're not even in the neighborhood of vitamin E intake that would really protect their system.
Hmm. Let's focus briefly on exercise as a final topic today, because there actually are some studies that show that vitamin E can not necessarily enhance athletic performance. I mean, we're always looking for that thing that's going to make us run faster or jump higher, but it can reduce the oxidative stress and damage that exercise causes.
And they saw this with marathon runners when they were first starting to notice this, and these were people who, you know, miles a day, and for all the good reasons that people get out and run those long distances, what they don't realize is they are producing some very high levels of free radicals because of all the oxygen that's pumping through their lungs and through their bloodstream. And what the research hinted at with exercise was for people who were really exertional, marathon, triathlon kind of exercise, 1,200 units was the level of vitamin E that was most protective against that increased free radical production with that intense exercise.
So that's, I think, an important adjunct to anyone who's on a training program. You know, maybe I'm shortchanging myself because I only take, well, actually, in my multi, which does contain, it's a multi that I designed, and I made sure that it has alpha tocopherol, but also generous gamma tocopherol and tocotrienols.
Right.
So maybe
oh,
I'm
good.
Getting, you know, since I take two of the E-Gems daily, I'm probably getting nearly 1,000, something around there.
Right.
Maybe 1,100.
You have to remember to look at all the different formulas. You know, if you're taking a vision formula, if you're taking a multi, if you're taking a separate antioxidant, there's probably a little bit of vitamin E in some of those
as well.
Too.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been a marvelous discussion, and you're a great communicator, and I've learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot. But what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can people learn more? And we want to give them a reference to J.R. Carlson, because they've got some good educational resources on their website, too.
They do. CarlsonLabs.com is a great place to learn more about the Carlson products. I always like to give a little shout out to the Linus Pauling Institute for getting educated on different nutrients. And if you Google that and get into some of the different archives that they have on the different vitamins, and you can really get excited about things like vitamin C and vitamin E all over again.
Great. And what about you? How about people who are wanting to listen to your radio program?
Yeah, food for thought. But just go to my blog, Jolie Blogs, J-O-L-I-E-B-L-O-G-S, JolieBlogs.com. And there are links to the radio shows, lots of articles and good information there. And that's a good way to keep up with me when I'm not on the air.
Well, thank you so much, and you know, I really respect your wellspring of knowledge, because you're truly authoritative on vitamin E and related subjects. And if you're that good on vitamin E,
thank you.
If you're that good on vitamin E, you're probably doing a great service to the public on a wide variety of nutritional issues. So, more power to you. We're getting the word out.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it. It is an honor to be with you today.
It's my pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.